No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Today, we're in here at Tory Lanez.
Yeah.
They said it couldn't be done.
Yeah, but it's done, right?
It's done. This, bitch. This thing is done.
It's done.
How you doing, bro?
I'm good, man.
We were just talking about it's a promo day. So you're in the groove. You've been talking about yourself for many hours already?
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's been good, man. But me, I'm a workaholic. So, like, you know, any chance I get to be able to present my music to people is always, like, you know, I'm not, like, one of them dudes who's, like, oh, I don't want to do this today because, like, I get paid for this. It's my dream, you know?
Right. So. I love just, like, interviews in general, though, because I feel like it's, like, a different part of an artist that could shine and that could, like, you know, I remember when Jay-Z said back in the day, he said, like, and my interviews are hotter. He said that in a song. I had never heard somebody brag about their interview skills before.
Nah, but it's true. Like, I mean, you watch a lot of interviews today and it's like niggas don't even know how to talk.
Mm.
Like, or niggas don't know how to just have a regular conversation without feeling like it's a third person because the camera.
Yeah.
So, you know.
A lot of people are so, like, trained to not talk about anything interesting, like, in their life because they feel like it's snitching or shit-talking or whatever. They just freeze up on camera.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there's certain lines you're supposed to cross and certain lines that you're not supposed to cross.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, like, as an entertainer, you know, we're here to talk about things that go on and here to be honest about things that go on. I think a lot of people have a problem with being honest.
Mm. You know? What's the super annoying questions that you hate that people ask you?
The only thing that's, like, kind of annoying, I think, is just, like, it's not really annoying. It's just I get asked it so repetitively. Just, like, you know, when the first thing they say is, well, tell everybody about yourself, like, how you got into, like, you know, this, that. But it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, it's generic. It's, like, you don't really even care about how I really got into this. You're just asking me this question because I guess that's just how you're supposed to start off your interview.
I have, like, insecurity about it sometimes, too, because I'll be, like, making questions to ask somebody, and then I sometimes realize that, like, the super annoying thing people do is just ask an artist about every other artist or every other person that they've had something to do with, whether it was beef, or, oh, you did a song with this dude, you did a little project with this dude, blah, blah, blah. And then by the end of the interview, the whole interview is just you asking them about every person that they've known or worked with.
I mean, it is what it is, right? I mean, some people go to interviews for different things, you know? A lot of people go to interviews because they want clarity on things that they feel like, damn, like I never really got closure on this. I don't really know what really happened. Like, ask that. You know what I'm saying? Like, but that's people, you know, you can't stop what people want. And right. I'm sure you as a person who has to interview, I'm sure you get people like, yo, why didn't you ask da 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 da, or, you know, and they try to probably base your shit around that too, right?
Yeah, too. And it's a weird line too, because it's like sometimes, like, we had Usher on the other day, and it's like, Usher had a lot of bullshit in the news and shit, but it's like different ways to think of it. Like, do you want to get that big headline thing of him probably not being happy about you asking him about something?
Yeah.
Or do you want to just be chill and be cool and, like, have a nice conversation with somebody you respect for an hour?
It's
which
true.
A lot of times I defer to that because it's like, I don't really necessarily want to be the dude having the conversation about the messy ass shit that you this don't even
true.
Want to be
yeah,
public.
I can roll my weed in here.
Of course.
My button.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Can I please?
Big Kush all day.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. The most important thing, because I actually have this a little bit laid out here just so I don't forget, first of all. My audience wants to know the status of your work with X, how that came to be. Anything about that, I'm very, very interested.
Yeah, well, first off, you know, I'm a big fan of X. And, you know, when I made this statement in the first place, I was really excited. Because I have a record with him, and basically I wanted to put it on my album, but, you know, the business and the clearance timing and all of that kind of stopped it from being on this track list.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to be in the works to do is to get it cleared after an edit, because I couldn't get it in the time that it was. And with all due respect, you know, anything that they say that has to do with his clearance or when things can be released, you know, I respect that. I don't, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to be like, yo, you have to release this because it's got to be like, nah, it's not that. You know what I'm saying? It's not.
How did you even come into communication with him?
It's crazy because my family and his best friend's family are, like, really close.
Really?
And so, like, when he was alive, they were, what's his name? Marlon. And pretty much what it was is, like, I got a friend named Patrick. Patrick is Marlon's brother, and Patrick is my nigga. But I never knew Patrick's brother at the time, you feel me? So somehow, some way, they were connected, and that's what originally connected us. So it was a situation where I never actually even got to meet him, but it was a situation where we were all supposed to work, and then that song got sent to me while he was alive. So it was a situation where I was like, all right, cool, we did the song. But then when the whole situation happened, you know, and he passed, then, you know, things got a little, like, I would never want to cross a line. Like I said, like, I would never want to cross a line when it comes to clearing it.
Right.
You feel me? Because, or just putting it out, because it just is what it is. But
that shit gets super complicated as soon as somebody dies.
I don't like to go into shit like that, you know?
So were you a fan of him before that even happened? Like, what was your impression of him when you heard him and shit?
What the craziest thing about it is when it comes to, like, his first album, that it stuck with me because I didn't think it was ever going to sound like that, like, from the stuff that came out before.
Yeah.
But then when I came in here and, like, Jocelyn Flores and songs like that, like, and I'm in, because I was in, I think we were in United Kingdom when we first heard that.
Right.
And it was just very gray outside. It was very, you know, I was just traveling and seeing different, like, landscapes and shit.
There's
like,
definitely a mood in the UK, for
yeah,
sure.
It's definitely, you know what I'm saying?
And that's then, why I need to be here. Here's the opposite of that.
Yeah, it's
sun
it's
out
totally,
every day.
Yeah, it's
tall
totally,
girls
totally,
and shit.
Totally different. And because of that,
you got,
like,
purple weed, by the way.
Yeah, you know.
That shit is like Barney.
Fuck it.
I'm just saying.
Fuck it, man, you know? But yeah, like, when I heard his music originally the first time, is what originally drawed me to him. And what's crazy, what a lot of people don't know, the last project that X liked on his SoundCloud before he died was one of my mixtapes.
Really?
It was Lost Cause. And to me, that was like something that really stuck with me, because Lost Cause was a project of mine that really, it really meant a lot to me. It came from my heart, my soul. I talked about things like, you know, my mom dying and just different things, like, you feel me? And the fact that that was the last thing that he liked, you know, before his passing, that spoke to me in a weird way that I feel like was trying to send me a message, like, yo, your word and everything that you got as you're on this planet is it, you
That's
know?
That's fucking crazy.
As you go or when you go, the music is what's going to speak for you.
Right.
And, you know, it's just crazy that was such a coincidence that was the last thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I found that crazy.
That is crazy, just because, like, I mean, he was super all over the place with, like, the kind of music that he related to, and that's why, with him passing, there's so many different people that came out with, like, screenshots of their DMs or, like, conversation, whatever, like, people you would have not really thought had anything to do with him and shit.
Yeah, it's
and
crazy.
I know all about, like, I know, like, girl, like, female artists who worked with him or, like, did shit together, and they never even put it out there because it was, like, so controversial at the time, shit like that, that the world doesn't even know that he collaborated with, like, all kinds of different people who maybe for whatever reason kept that little bit on the low.
It really is crazy, you know, just the influence that he had, even for being around for such a short time. I think it was just very special. And a lot of, you know, a lot of people never really get to see things until you're forced to look at it. You know what I'm saying? And I think with him is he was one of those people where it's a little bit of the opposite. Like, he came in and you were already forced to look at it because he forced you to look at it because he made it like that. You know what I'm saying? He made the art be so, like, out loud and just, like, one thing, and, like, I kind of ramble on about this, but, like, the one thing I like and I love about how it was with his stuff is no matter what it was, it always made you feel. And that's the thing with me and music and artists. It's like a lot of these days I listen to a lot of artists, they don't make me feel. Like, I like it for the moment, even if it's like, I don't care if you mumble all the whole song, but whatever you do, you gotta make me feel it in some sort of way. Make me feel some kind of way about it at the end. When the song's over, I want to feel some kind of way about it.
It's just like you heard so many motherfuckers rap over so many beats, and it's really a problem, like, with rap, where it's just so many people that I heard rap on songs and stuff that it's like, you could be a good rapper, you could be technically sound, you could be a good hook writer, whatever. This shit is so competitive that it oftentimes doesn't really matter unless you just really have that delivery, that vibe that just makes people listening to it feel like they know you, and he excelled in that.
100%. Yeah. 100%, and that's the dope thing about it. So, you know.
Definitely. When you look at his career and how he sort of just, like, came out and blew up, how would you compare that to, like, yourself, though? Because I feel like you are, like, a real, like, you have, like, a really incredible, like, skill set And then you had to like work hard for years to make people recognize like how good you were.
Bro, it's crazy, bro. Like, to be honest with you, like, I always say this to people, like, you know how there's like the artist that gets like the one song and then he blows?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm the artist that has to make like 90 of that one song in order for like it to get looked at,
mm-hmm.
which I'm not mad at, because that's only made me more of a beast. It's only made my work ethic stronger. It's only made me, you know, quicker with my pen when it comes to making hit records, or when it comes to making things that are gonna stick in your head, that, you know, that only made me strive harder to be big. Like, one day, bro, I promise you this, you could quote this. I don't care who's watching this. I don't care who believes this. I don't care who believes in me. I don't care who supports this. I'm telling y'all, I don't know at what point of my life, but at some point of my life, I will be the biggest artist in the world. That's not a joke. That's not something that I don't believe. That's something I believe wholeheartedly, and that's something I know. I know that's already written in the stars for me.
Have you always felt like that?
I've always felt like that.
Really?
I've always felt like that. And that's why, you know, when you go and you'll see the masses of people talk about Tory Lanez, whether or not they're like Uber fans or they're not Uber fans, a lot of people will say this one underlying statement, you know, he's very underrated, or he's very underestimated, or, you know, one of those kind of words. And mm-hmm. the reason why I think people say that is because people know how versatile and to the level of potential that I have. But I feel like it's a situation where it's just timing with me.
Right.
You know, it's everything comes in its time, and no matter how many times I fail, and like no matter how many times it doesn't go right, I keep getting up and it goes better the next time.
Have you had really low moments where you felt like maybe this shit just isn't gonna work, maybe it's all over? Is that the kind of, do you have that self-doubt that sometimes comes back to you?
I don't have moments of like, maybe this is just not gonna work, because honestly, for me to do that would be slapping God in the face. Like, I feel like God gave me a talent that is like so many people could take off with what I have. Right. You feel me? And for me to have it and for me to be blessed with it, it's like, for me to say something like that is just like, it's kind of like, nah.
But we all got our dark moments.
But I have moments where I'm like, damn, like, I'm doing this, and I'm not seeing the results that I want to see.
Mm.
I'm not, you know what I'm saying? Like, one day you go and you drop a video and it doesn't get the amount of views that you wanted to get right then and there. And then you go look at somebody else who dropped the video that same day and their shit's killing yours. And you're like, yo, what the fuck am I not doing right? My video even looks better than this, or even, you know, my song is better than this, or whatever the case is. It's just, I have to come to realize things come in the timing.
Mm.
And as long as I don't sit there and pay attention to what everybody else is doing in their time, it then makes my time not so like understandable, if that is a word, or like it makes my time easier to understand for me. Like, okay, cool, this will happen and this will slowly progress, but as long as it's progressing, I'm not in the same spot.
And you've had massive, you know, hits too, so it's kind of like, you could like, for a new artist, like your first time hitting 1 million views, you're happy as fuck. Your first time hitting 10 million shit. Views, but your problem is that you have hit a couple hundred million views on YouTube, so then it just becomes sort of an issue where it's like, how much does it take to make you happy? It's like being a fucking drug addict, bro.
And that's the fucked up thing. Somebody told me about that before. Somebody was like, you know, it's not that you're not doing great, your expectations are just very high for every single thing you
exactly.
do. And I was like, well, what do you, you know how artists get, like, yo, nigga, what are you, fuck you talking about, my nigga, like, my shit, but in all reality, he's right. It's like, sometimes we set our expectations up for things because we believe, like, yo, this has to be like this.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, like, no, it doesn't have to be like this. It has to be a different way for you to get a different result next time.
Mm.
You feel me? Like,
because the other 99.9% of musicians on planet Earth who are making, you know, R&B rap type music, if you were to ask them, like, would you want to be in Tory Lanez's place, they'd be like, fuck yeah, that's like the most I could ever hope for. But then once you actually get to that position, you're looking at these other fucking 8 dudes and being like, you know,
thing about it,
I want to be on the level that this dude is doing. He just exactly. sold more records than me this week. Fuck, exactly. Like, you know.
But the thing about it is too, what's crazy about it is, for me, being an artist, it's like, all right, every artist who's in like maybe I don't know one of these niggas' positions. I don't know. Someone who's just not as famous as me. Let's just think of some guy. And that artist might want to be me, but what he doesn't understand is that, and that, that artist might be the guy who has like the two hits, but he doesn't really have the talent like that, right? But the thing about it is, he might be like, yo, you know, I want the talent that Tory Lanez has, or I want the da-da-da-da. But what people don't understand about what I have is it's like, it's a gift and a curse, because it's like, yo, you're blessed enough to take this anywhere you want to take this, right? Like, anywhere. Like, you can, you want to go do rock today, you'll make the best rock songs.
That's how you feel.
Yeah. If I wanted to go do pop today, I'm going to make the best pop songs. If I want to go do, you know, for instance, I made the song Love. It's a reggae song, right? Double platinum. I made Pa Mi in 2 months, goes gold, which is all Spanish.
Right.
But then I still make hip hop records, Talk to Me, the BID Shooters, Say It's, songs like that, R&B, different platforms of music. You can take it to all these single places. But the thing about it is when you're that versatile, it then puts you at a place where when you take things too far this way, all your fans who you've accumulated over here get...
They're confused.
They're confused and upset.
That shit now? What the fuck? Yeah.
They're confused and upset, but then at the same time, you're like, yo, I just want to make music. Like, I'm not even trying to feed any of this. Like, you know, I'm just trying to make great music, but it's like, you have so many places that you could take it. You get put in a situation where it's like, yo, if I don't explore all of this, I'm fucking myself over. And when I do explore all of this, it kind of in a weird way fucks me in a weird way too.
Right.
Unless, you know, things come in with a certain time and I wait and I. But it's just that waiting time makes people be like, or makes you feel like, damn, people don't understand how talented I am. They don't even know that I can go on a fucking interview and rap for 10 minutes, but then could still go sing your girl to sleep. Could go fucking... It's different. Like,
if you were to look at a lot of the like freshman cover type dudes, or you know, like a lot of the like more underground dudes that come out have been popping the last years. Realistically, if they weren't making music exactly like they're making it, rapping over the exact type of beats they're making, like that, they probably would not be able to really have a career if they tried to go left in a different direction. Exactly. It's kind of weird for somebody like you who has a lot of different options that you could pursue. A lot of rappers who are popular these days are not really like musicians, I would say, in a real sense. That they are more like social media stars that are making music. Let's be real.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not to dismiss anyone, but you know, there's a lot of truth to it. A lot of people don't have like the skill set that you clearly have. I don't understand how the fuck you go and make all those Latino sounding ass songs and shit.
Nah, I feel that. I mean, I think that there are people who, you know, at the end of the day, you're more of a socialite, or you're more somebody that we like to watch on Instagram, or you know, however your shit translates to music. You know, it's brought us here because we've seen you and we like either to watch or we're entertained by whatever it is that you put out. That is, you know, the argument that many real musicians will always have with people who pop. But I feel like for me to be mad at that, or to be like upset at like those kind of people, is like, that's just some hater shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't like when talented niggas be mad because they shit not rocking. And like some new nigga who maybe might be screaming on his song, or a nigga might just be coming blah 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 on his song, and he's busting, and that nigga like, yo, that's not real music, and da 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 da. Like, I feel like that's hating shit. And
but did you have to learn that? That's like, it's gotta be like a temptation for anybody who's really like musical to sort of write off people and feel so, kind of angry. But is that something you've ever had to fight off, or you just know that?
I'm mad about another nigga's success. I know that sounds like it's the thing you're supposed to say, because no one wants to sound like a hater.
Right.
But I've really never ever been upset at anybody else's success. Like, if this nigga got on because his expression of his music was blah-bitty-blue-blah, then nigga, that's just, and he has a fan base for people who just want to sing blah-bitty-blue-blah, then yo, give it up, because that nigga found a way. Like, somehow, some way, it worked for him. He found a way. I have my path. I've been given talent. I've been given, there's so many ways that I could take it. Why not just be happy with that instead of sitting there spending my time hating on another nigga because another nigga's doing some shit and he's younger and he's just, you know, my nigga, it's just some hating shit. My nigga,
have you ever actually done something that you didn't believe in musically, like actually allowed something to come out that maybe you were feeling a little bit like influenced by the label
I mean, I put out this song called LA Confidential. I didn't really like it, but people loved it.
Really?
But I never really, it really was not a, you know, and then it was like the second song that like we had put out, I think originally when we first started working. But mm-hmm. I didn't like the song because it was just like one of those things that just for me, I felt like it wasn't the time for it. It wasn't that I didn't actually like it musically, but I just felt like it was something that was a little bit forced. You feel me? Mm-hmm. And I've realized in my life, like, I don't like to do things that are forced, bro. Like, I like to just relax and let things happen organically. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a you know, a hindrance to me, because in this industry, sometimes you have to force your hand into certain things mm-hmm. and shit like that, you know? But I just feel like ultimately in life, everything goes better when it's organic.
And there's constantly opportunities for anybody who starts coming up in the music game to go and do some shit that is like, you know, to have songs written for you, or to just get thrown onto a song with some pop star girl, or, you know, there's just like a lot of options for you to do things that would probably go against like the long-term brand that you're really trying to build. Like, I don't know, like, I feel like as soon as rappers come into the game and shit, it's like, the label, once they get signed and stuff, I've seen labels start trying to like force pre-written songs on artists and stuff, and sort of try to like take them in a direction that's away from what they might naturally be feeling.
Definitely.
Is that option like out there? Like, have you had the label trying to pressure you to do shit that you thought was whack?
Sure, you should just ash on the floor. Not just playing with you.
We do have asterisks, but
I don't want to disrespect your shit.
Nah, there's got to be some sitting over there, or if we could just.
Okay,
give you my iPhone here. Ash on this thing. Oh, the cap. No cap. That's a good one. No jumper lighter, too. You see, Tory Lanez, only the best.
Smoking only the best with the best lighters, you heard? Black.
Is that a Toronto blunt?
It's rolled like a from nowhere blunt.
Do you use the phrase like Toronto blunt, though? I think I heard Killy say that when he was out here.
I mean, a Toronto blunt is when it's usually like coned.
Yeah.
Americans really kind of roll in like a straight line
yep.
for some reason. At least the majority of dudes that I've met or people that I've met who smoke, they roll in a straight line. We're kind of taught to roll in a cone. So I don't know.
It's a weird thing that's happening. I don't know. I myself personally, I don't like the fucking monster inch wide blunts. That's too much.
I feel you. I'm a guy who I smoke avidly. Like I smoke a lot. Like I get around a lot of people and I think that they smoke. My fault. Around a lot of people and I think that they smoke, but they don't actually smoke. And then it's like, damn, like I was so deceived by this nigga. Like, yo, like my nigga, all these videos I saw, I'm passing this nigga the second blunt, or I'm passing him the blunt the third time, and he like, yo, nah, I'm good off that. Like, come on, bro. I smoke a lot, though. I love to smoke. You feel me?
Right.
To the point where it's actually like really bad for me. The amount of backwards that I'm running through a day, it's really not healthy.
Right.
And I'm starting to realize that like more and more and more shit just be happening in the middle of the night. My chest would be hurting and shit. Like my nigga, like nah.
I got a friend that I was just talking to. He was telling me, he was like, I was smoking 40 blunts a day. And then like my fucking doctor told me I had pre-cancer of the throat. I'm like, God damn, that's what I got to look forward to. Not that that's guaranteed to happen. It's just, you know, these things in time. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
As a smoker, I hate that shit. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, I'm trying to stop.
You just think, I'm not smoking a cigarette, so fuck it. I'm doing something all right for myself.
And that's the thing. Like, see, that's how I know you've been where I've been. Like, I'm one of them dudes like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like I'm smoking 20 cigarettes a day or, you know, but at the end of the day, when it comes to these backwards now, they make it a whole different thing.
Right.
Because it's like, I don't know, man. It's just a lot, bro.
A lot of times I tap out on the blunt and then I have insecurity about tapping out on the blunt because I'm with people that smoke so much. But then at the same time, it's like I'm in the studio with rappers and shit. And I'm kind of trying to like, in my head, I'm trying to make plays and like network with people and shit. And if I smoke 10 blunts back to back, I'm probably not going to be capable of having a very good conversation with someone.
Nah, I feel like, honestly, weed and smoking has probably been the best conversation starter for me, period. When it comes to people, there's been relationships where I'm talking about millionaire niggas, you know, white dudes, lawyers, and it's all started by that simple gesture.
And it goes a long way.
Yo.
Because not a lot of people are passing them the blunt.
Thing about it is true smokers, and it doesn't matter. You could have a corporate outfit on. You could be a businessman. It don't matter what. A true smoker is not going to deny the blunt twice. If they're trying to stop smoking weed, just you'll pass someone something like, nah, I'm off that shit. And if they really even get past that first round, like, you gotta applaud them. But if that shit come around one more time, it's over. You're gonna smoke, my nigga, if you're a true smoker.
It really does bring people from different worlds together, because, like, my filmer, Chris, he's, like, a white dude, and I seen him on stage, like, we were at this NBA Youngboy show, and he's filming on stage and shit, and then I see him just, like, he had weed, and he had blunts, and he's rolling up and, like, smoking with his whole crew and shit. By the time I get up there on stage with him, I'm like, he's ganged up, all NBA fucking with him. And I'm like, this is just 100% because of weed. Like,
definitely, though.
That brought them together, and all of a sudden, he's definitely kicking it tough with all these 19-year-old kids from the hood that otherwise he probably would not really have much to talk about with.
I'm trying to tell you, weed is a universal thing. Definitely, man.
It's a thing. You mess around with any other drugs at this point in your life? Mm-hmm. You're over it, or have you ever on that?
I've word to my dead mother, rest in peace to her soul. I never popped a pill. I never did coke. I never did Xanax. I never did none of that shit. Like, I only smoke weed.
Right.
You feel me? And, like, the reason why I know is because I'm a real, like, addictive personality nigga. Like, I will, like, if I was on some dumb shit like that, like, I really would be fucked up. And I'm truthful enough with myself to tell myself and understand that fact.
Right.
Like, if I get on some shit, my nigga, I'm gonna get on some shit. And that's why I'll never get on some shit. Like, this is as far as it's going for me.
Right.
And it's been like this since I was, like, what, 14, 15, smoking weed.
When did you start making music? What age?
I was 11.
11.
I was 11. I started making music shortly after my mom died. She was anemic. And then she had a rare disease that, like, only 4 out of 1 million people get a year.
Wow.
It's like a rare disease. She was the most healthiest woman. One day, I went to school. She was sick in the morning. Came back, she was dead.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
And were you super close with her?
Super close. I'm the baby of 6 kids. We all got the same mom, same dad.
How much older is the oldest one than you?
At the time, I'm trying to think how old my oldest sister is now. She's like at least 34, 35 now.
Respect
I'm 26.
For not knowing, by the way.
I'm sorry, bro. I love my sister to death, but I don't know, like, half, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, just off the top, like, you know, but she's definitely at least, like, 9 or 8 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes down, you know. But I was definitely the youngest. And pretty much because of that, me and my mom had a specific, like, special,
right,
you know, relationship and bond.
Last one.
You feel me?
Yeah.
And so, like, 11 years old, I'm just kind of starting to understand life. And I lost my mom. So, like, yo, I spiraled into this, like, yo, I don't fuck about nothing, my nigga. And nothing niggas can tell me. A nigga couldn't come up to me and tell me nothing, nigga. Like, my whole outlook on life was, you're not my mom. So any position of authority that tried to tell me something, it couldn't sit right with me. I was very rebellious. I got kicked out of every single school I've ever been to since 6th grade. Up until 10th grade, where I was like, yo, fuck this shit, nigga, I'm out. I'm gonna be a rapper, peace, niggas.
Really?
You know,
you think your life would have gone in a fundamentally different direction if your mom had...
Indeed.
Really?
100%. And that's why it's weird. Like, I always look at, like, my talent, like, it's such a gift and a curse, you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes I think, like, if my mom didn't die, I wouldn't have wanted to do this. But if I didn't want to do this, and if I didn't do this, there's so many people and so many lives that, like, depend on my music and depend on me that I feel like I wouldn't have been able to help. You feel me?
Right.
Like, and it comes to a point where, like, people come up to me like, yo, bro, I almost committed suicide, bro. Like, multiple, like, yo, there's probably, out of all my fans, bro, there's probably, like, 30 or 40% of them are kids that, like, deal with depression that's very, very, very deep.
Mm-hmm.
And they always come, majority of them tell me. And it's like, yo, they tell me, yo, bro, you took me through some shit. I was going through X, Y, Z. Yo, I almost ended it. I almost da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, damn, like.
Those ones always hit you hard.
What if, like, yeah, like, it's like, yo, what if my music, like, and it's fucked up. Because remember when you were saying, you know, with the self-doubt and shit like that, like, there's times when I'm like, yo, man, like, I don't feel like I'm progressing as fast as I want to progress. And, like, all these other artists who are not as, you know, talented as me, they're getting bigger in a standpoint at this time than I am, and it's bothering me. And then it's like, when I go through those moments, and then I meet a fan who's like, you know, my nigga, my life was almost gone, and I found your shit. It's like,
that puts in perspective.
It puts me in back into my nigga. Who gives a fuck where I'm at? Who gives a fuck
I already
who
made
I'm
it.
Competing with? Like, I don't even, my nigga, like, I'm not even competing with none of these niggas, my nigga. It's niggas who need me. It's females out here who need me. Like, if I don't make this music, some of these people, where's their life gonna go? Could go to shit if they don't have this music that they say that they listen to every single day.
Who do you, when you think of your average fan, what would you say it is? Or is there anybody that you're like sort of picturing in your head when you're recording?
You know, I picture, I don't know what I picture, but I never see my fans one way. In like my head when I'm at a show and shit, like, and even the way my actual shows are, they're very diverse. There's not just black people at my shows. It's not just white kids. It's not, it's like Asians, Indonesians, Africans, and people who are like, yo, I came from the Arab Emirates over here to come to your show. And it's like, yo, what the fuck?
Because I still haven't seen you live. So I actually am having like a hard time imagining in my head like exactly what the demographic shit would be like. But I always hear that you're one of the best dudes live.
Bro, I promise you, bro. Everything I love, bro. And I stand behind that shit so deeply. Like, I really believe I'm one of the best live performers of our time right now. You feel me? But back to what I was saying, it just like, I think personally, like with a lot of the stuff that I've done and a lot of the music and a lot of the talent that I've been blessed with, it's a gift and a curse, because if that situation with my mother never really happened, I don't know if I'd have been here, you know what I'm saying? Like doing this.
Because I think a lot of times it takes like a childhood trauma to like, you know, it takes a very special type of person to like, when you really think about the statement you're making as a rapper, as a musician, you're saying that like, yeah, there's 5 million motherfuckers making music, but I think I'm the best one, or I at least think I'm bringing something to the table that needs to be heard. That's a very like, that's something that a sane person, a person who's completely like at ease with like the world around them, might not be able to make that statement. Like, you have to have an insane amount of self-belief or something that you're trying to rectify in your head, that kind of thing, that makes you want to go so hard to actually become a superstar.
I know I am the person I believe I am. Mm. I know it. And the world is trying to doubt me.
And the world will doubt you the whole way. When you're nothing, they'll doubt you. And even once you're like really up there, they will still doubt you.
I love it. I love it because I've realized that it fuels me. Mm. And at the end of the day, that's what makes me, that's what drives it. It's like when niggas are like, yo, you can't. It's like I have this unfathomable urge to be like, you're wrong. Mm. That's why everything I do is always in statements that are like, kind of proving that I did this. My first album was called I Told You, because everybody told me, yo, it's not possible. My teacher told me, yo, it's impossible. Niggas on the block, niggas in my school were like, yo, it's impossible for you to be a rapper. That only happens for certain niggas. Niggas get chose for shit like that.
Right.
No, bro, it's just gotta believe whatever the fuck you wanna do.
And it's so hard to make that case when you haven't actually accomplished something with yourself. Yeah, it's kinda, exactly. In comparison, it's kinda easy for you to sit here and say, I believe that I'm gonna be the biggest in the world. I believe that I'm this great, because you've accomplished enough that everybody can kinda be like, all right, we'll give you something. Right. But when you're nobody in high school, it's so hard to say that shit. Everybody knows what we all think of random ass people who say that they're rappers. We all think, yeah.
But you know what? Every now and then, and this is the difference between me, and I don't ever want to ever be like, yo, I'm different from any kid that's in high school, because nah, I was that kid. Mm-hmm. At one point, I did think like, yo, what if, you know what I'm saying? There was one point when I was in high school where, because I really still felt like this. I still felt this way, like, yo, I'm going to be the biggest. And I remember rapping and actually really not going nowhere, like in high school, right? Like not going nowhere with it, right? And I remember getting on the phone with one of my cousins, and my cousin was like, he sat there and he broke down all the reasons on why this was not real and why this was not actually possible. And I'm not gonna lie, dog, for 4 or 5 days, he broke my shit, dog.
He probably thought he was doing you a favor.
He thought he was.
he broke my whole shit. Like, he broke my, like, my whole way of thinking, my whole, and it's like, it's crazy. My confidence has never, ever been broken. And, like, at that time, there was that point where I was like, yo, maybe this shit really isn't real. Somehow, some way, bro, I just kept doing what I was supposed to do, and things just fell where they were supposed to fall. Because when you keep going, despite that last statement, it happens. That one statement that always, like, that one time when somebody says something and then it breaks your whole, like, damn, like, what if they're right? That means that you're at that bridge. That really actually means you're at the crossroad of, like, yo, this can actually happen if you believe past this point. But this is the last thing a nigga's going to throw at you before. And it's going to be that thing where it's going to be like, it's like someone telling you, yo, listen, bro, I walked this bridge 10 times. And every time I get to that point right there, the bridge always falls, but I just find a way to get to the cliff. You're like, fuck, I'm not going on that fucking bridge, my nigga. This shit's gonna fall. Da 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 da. But he's telling you about a bridge that's tied, a bridge that's already still a regular bridge that you can still walk on. But he's saying, yo, every time I get to this point, you don't even know if what this nigga's saying is even really accurate. But it's the way he's explaining it. Yo, I get to the left, I take this one step right on that one brick right there, dog, and I turn around because I know it's about to fall. And it's like you're supposed to believe that. And that might break you from ever crossing the bridge. But if you just cross the bridge, my nigga, you don't know what's gonna happen on the other side until you do it. And at the end of the day, the thing about doing it is, what the fuck are you gonna lose? You're already in a situation where you don't think it's gonna fucking happen, but this is what the fuck you wanna do. You might as well go for it. And if you're not gonna go for it, what the fuck you there for? It's like, what the fuck was it installed in you for? What was the reason on why it was given to you? I feel like every single person who has a desire to do something in their heart, and somebody who has the desire to feel a certain way and the desire to be like, yo, I am going to do this. And I am, and sets themselves like, yo, I am going to do, I believe that desire is put in you because that's your purpose. That is your purpose. That is what you've been called to do. That thing that burns in you every day and you're like, yo, if I could just do this for a living And this was just like all I had to do, my nigga, I'd be set because I'm so good at that thing. That thing is your purpose. So many people walk around and they miss the fact that they have that purpose because they have this burning desire that it sucks because it's like I said, it's a gift and a curse. You have this burning desire to do something and it's so fucking amazing and it's so crazy, but because it's so amazing and so crazy, it seems unreachable. Mm. And then when it seems unreachable, you stop looking at that thing like, yo, it can be reached. So you start to drift further and further away. And that's what causes that depression of like, yo, I'm never going to be able to do that. That's not real.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Definitely.
And that's kind of how I feel about it. You know,
there's been times in my life where I felt like I was getting the most hate, where I felt like I was like really starting to doubt myself the most. But those really were pivotal moments, because there's always a corresponding moment after that where you get your fucking swagger back and you realize like, yeah, this is not going to break me. Like, I'm not
exactly.
Like, I've literally physically inside my body right now don't feel like I can just lay down and die here. And it's like, I'm going to have to keep going one way or another. And like that is like when you talk about crossing the bridge, that's like those fucking journeys, those little mini traumatic, catastrophic journeys that seem like the biggest thing in the world. I'm sure that a lot of people might not get that, like young up and coming rappers. They might not realize that there was 100 times where you probably felt like, fuck, something like this is just not going to work. It's not like something bad happened and you just feel kind of defeated. And then like you come back from that, and like being able to travel through that is like, it's what it's all about. If you are going to get beat up one time and let that go, not beat up literally, but mentally, that's just a sign that you weren't ready to do it. If you fucking are going to lay down.
And that's the thing about it. It's like, it's all about standing for it and not laying down, because the thing about it is like, like I said, it's like, what else do you have to lose? You don't have it already. It's not like you have it and if you go try this, you're going to lose it.
Mm.
You're going to go get it. That's the whole point. You know what I'm saying? And no matter what obstacle stands in your way, you say, fuck it, my nigga. Somehow, some way, it's going to work. And the laws of attraction in life make it work.
The difference in being like brand new, though, when you're in high school trying to just start getting going with music or whatever, is that if you keep fucking up, you could fuck up for 10 years. And it's like, well, you already weren't shit. So it's like, you can keep trying and fucking up and it's okay. But do you ever feel like crushed by the weight of what you've already accomplished? Because you already are this famous person that has to keep up things to a certain extent because you've already accomplished what you have. People already know who you are. Does that ever like get to you? Because it's a very different struggle than what you're on when you're in high school.
No, that then brings me to the gift.
Mm.
Because the thing about it is I've been blessed to be able to take this through all the lanes. Like, people be like, yo, man, I'm... Like, the funniest thing to me is when niggas be like, yo, I miss the old Tory Lanez, or I miss, like, when he used to be, like, say it, and, like, love, and, like, when he used to make these big, big, big records, and da-da-da-da-da, and it's like, what people gotta understand is, like, I'm so in touch with my bag of talent, of things that I can pull out of that bag. I'm so in touch with that, that at any given moment, I could flip on a switch and make Say It's and Loves and only world records and stop doing certain things. But I like music, and I like to touch music and make people feel music in all ways and formats. But at the same time, it's like there is times where I got to go, you know what? Let me hold back on this, and let me come back to this so they don't forget.
Right.
That's why every now and then when people be like, yo, he a singer, he can't rap. That's why I go on Flex and go rap for 10 minutes straight and go on Sway and go rap for 11, 12 minutes straight.
But is that just as natural to you as making like a pop song?
It is, because it's the gift that I've been blessed with.
Mm.
But when you're so blessed to do these things and to do them at such a level, it's a curse, because now, like I said, when you move over here, the people from over here, they don't feel the same. And then you move over here, and the people from over here are like, yo, your records were bigger over here.
Mm.
And so you're like, yo, my nigga, matter of fact, yo, listen, bro, I'm going to just make what I want to make. And that's why, like, I'm happy about this Love Me Now shit. Because with Love Me Now, all my other albums, I was like, yo, I have to make sure I put the rap song here. And I got to make sure I express the fact that I got bars here. And I got to make sure that when I sing here, and I got to do something real creative with the interlude and the production. And I got to produce in the da-da-da-da. And then I came to this point of like, yo, fuck all of that, dog. Like, I want to be free.
Mm.
Like, bro, like, I want to be free, bro. Like, I don't care what people say about me, bro. Like, I don't care what, like, I don't want nobody to ever be able to listen to this and be like, yo, you stole my sound, or you stole my style, or this, that, or that. Like, fuck that, bro. I want to feel free, bro. I want to go on all my songs and say whatever the fuck comes in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I want to feel free. I want to be able to express myself, bro. Like, and the thing about it is, when you get to the point where you start trying to please the fans, not necessarily the fans, but the people and the critics who are like, yo, he was only good when he da-da-da-da-da-da, you get to this point where you stab yourself in the foot, because you're trying to chase these old vibes or these old things that you don't even need to do, when it's like, it comes natural to you. If you really want to do that, you can do that. If you don't want to do it, you don't. You know what I'm saying? And at the end of the day, it's on you. It's on me to make the music that I want to make. And when it's time for me to jump back in the Say It bag and jump back in the Love bag, and it's time for me to jump back into the fucking whatever bag, the Spanish bag, the Liddy Again bag, the fucking whatever bag it is, I'll do that. But for now, I want to feel free.
You want to know the first time I ever heard you?
When?
I saw, I think it was 2015, and I was in Argentina. And I was actually getting ready for the X interview. Like, that was right around the corner. And I saw the Say It video, and it wasn't like the kind of thing that I naturally like gravitate towards normally. But I was like, this shit is fucking hard as fuck. Mm. And I emailed the email that was in your fucking bio on Twitter and asked for an interview. Wow. Didn't get hit back. So I'm glad we finally got to this. And I also do not hold that against you or anyone involved at all. Trust me.
You know what I'm saying?
I had zero clout at the time. And then I also sent the video to my girlfriend at the time, who was like a super normal white girl that did not know anything about rap. And she like made fun of me, because she's like, that's a huge hit. It's all over the radio and shit. You're totally out of the loop that you didn't know this. So I got kind of sunned by my regular ass girlfriend at the time.
Nah, it was, that's the crazy, and you know what's fucked up about that whole situation is, because like, for all my deep core fans, and like I was saying, even with the ex situation about like that project that he liked, that Lost Cause project, for all my core fans who know that project and know Conflicts in My Soul and Cruel Intentions and these things that I was putting out previous to this, they know what I'm really about, but it's a wide variety of the world that when I got signed to Interscope, the first song that I ever even recorded, the first song they ever put me in the studio and that I ever recorded was Say It.
Really?
They put me in the studio and were like, yo, here's a producer. Let's see what you come out with. I came out with Say It. That was the first thing I ever recorded.
What was the energy? Were you thinking like, damn, I'm signed. I got to make a hit.
The song's going to be that big.
Really?
Because the thing about it is like, I was doing that Say It sound already on a series that I have called the Chicks Tapes, mm-hmm. where it's like I only sample old school R&B. Like there's a Chicks Tape 1, Chicks Tape 2, Chicks Tape 3, Chicks Tape 4, and it's full of like legendary samples, but it's just all R&B music. Mm-hmm. And it's like when I was doing that, I was used to making songs that had samples and chops. That's why I love, and those songs, they came so easy for me. But when I started doing that shit to a certain extent, a lot of niggas started copying my shit. Like, mm-hmm. niggas started, like, taking samples and only and putting the bass line and just doing little shit that was like, my nigga, you know you took that from me. So I stopped. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to leave this R&B shit alone for a second. And I'm going to let these niggas kill themselves.
Right.
And now, you know what's crazy? Who do we have? Here, still to this day, that was doing R&B when I was doing R&B with all the niggas that was out. Who's still here that's still making nobody? There's nobody in R&B right now. There's nobody. I mean, don't get me wrong, except for my nigga Jacquees and, you know what I'm saying, and Bryson, you know, he's back, of course. But in the times, y'all know how big R&B was in that year that I came out with to Say It, and maybe this is not really up your alley at the time, but...
No, I'm putting the pieces together.
But at the same time, it was like, but who's still here that's still giving you constant R&B, you know, at that pace anymore? Mm-hmm. Nobody. And I feel like a lot of it was because a lot of the young dudes that were coming up were, it was like a carbon copy project of like a lot of different R&B that was coming out that was kind of the same.
Mm.
And so I stopped doing certain things. I stopped making certain songs because I was tired of cats taking my style. Now we're about to be full back in effect, Chicks Tape 5. I'm about to bring the R&B back in because it's time. But I did this because I wanted to, like I said, I wanted to be free away from that. I didn't want to feel like this is what I'm known for. Like, nah, that's just a side and a part of my talent.
If you had like fully put yourself in that box, you think your career would have had less longevity if you didn't like at some point just step back and say, all right, I'm going to do different things. I'm going to show the world all my different skill sets.
I think, honestly, personally, not necessarily. I think I would have been probably bigger, but I would have only been big for that.
Mm.
You get what I'm saying? And it's as slower as it takes when you have to show people all your talents, and as slower as it takes, I'm not tripping about that. Like, I'd rather it take longer, but by the time I get there, y'all understand why I'm here, opposed to I get there and you're like, oh, well, he just sings. And like when I start rapping or something, it's weird. You know what I'm saying? Like I would never want that. Like, you know, I never want to go to a show and like have to sit there and just sing all day. Like that's really boring to me. Like I really crowd surf and crowd walk and treat the show like a jungle gym every show for the last 570 shows that I've done. Like my nigga, I crowd surfed and crowd walked and wild out every single show, bro. It doesn't matter if there was 11 kids there, my nigga, we right. wild it out, dog. Like it, you know what I'm saying? So I would never want to go to those places and see those same kids and just be like singing. Like I just can't, like, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to do that, dog. Like, you know.
But so what is it in your like early musical pedigree that enables you to go and do the reggae songs or do like the Latino crowd type songs, everything like that? Like who were you as an early artist that allowed you to like be open-minded enough to be able to go into those areas?
I was a little kid. I loved Lil Wayne growing up. You know what I'm saying? Wayne's one of my biggest like influences when it comes to like rapping, and like he was just always so versatile with every beat that he went on.
Mm.
You know, and it was always like it played a big part in the stuff that I felt like I was able to go on. And like, you know, for me personally, like I was also somebody who I actually didn't sing good at all. I fucking sucked.
Really?
Yeah, I sucked. I was horrible.
You had to learn?
Yeah, I used to listen to like niggas on my fucking like iPod and shit and then like try to sing like them. And like eventually, you know, singing is like a muscle. So the more you sing, the better you get. It's like working out at the gym. Really? Stronger your vocals get. So me singing, I really wasn't good. I was really faint. It didn't sound good. It was crackly. But the more I sang, it just got better. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I only, like, the only reason why I even taught myself to sing was because, like, when I was coming up, niggas didn't want to sing on my songs. Mm. I just got to a point where, like, people just didn't really want to do a lot of shit for me. Like, it would come natural to a lot of other people, but for some reason, for me, it's just like, nah, I gotta work like extra fucking stupid, dumb hard for some odd reason. Like, when something would just get handed, like, let's say you're an artist, I'm an artist, we come up the same time.
Right.
Let's say your music's not even as good as mine, but nigga, we come up the same time, a lot of shit for some random reason would just get handed to you, and it wouldn't get handed to me.
Right.
But it's like the shit that I need, and if I had what you had, I'd be fucking out of here. But it's one of those things where it's like, when I was coming up, those things weren't handed to me.
If you got to work really hard for it, I notice that a lot of times in life and shit, where it's just certain people, like I'm around a lot of BMXers and skateboarders and stuff. A lot of times it's the dude who has all the talent in the world that doesn't really have to work that hard, who isn't really able to like have the fucking will to go through with it in the long run. Whereas
shit,
somebody who might have to like really, really struggle with shit. When I look at my success of just talking about shit on camera, I look at the fact that I was like not skilled physically as a kid, because I needed glasses until I was in like fourth grade, right? So when I look back at it, my parents had me doing baseball and basketball, and I was trash as fuck, and I didn't know why. And then in like fourth grade, I realized that I needed glasses, and then it all started to make sense to me. And I didn't really put the pieces of the puzzle together till later. It's like, oh, that's why you're trash at ball, because you had bad hand-eye coordination because you couldn't see shit. But in a lot of ways, I think that that's what made me overcompensate, like verbally or like to do stuff like creatively.
Yeah.
Because I had like, you know, I wasn't able, I'm 6'3". People were looking at me like, you're supposed to play ball and shit.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it. I was trash. Well, and I wanted to sit in my room and play video games.
That's the fucked up thing about me too. I never made no like school teams.
Mm.
And
oh, you think you got the Napoleon complex?
Maybe. Look, maybe I do though. Like, you know, but I never made any school teams like... but it wasn't always just because of my athleticism or whatever. It was sometimes it was just because of bad behavior or grades or whatever the case is. But because of that, like I always felt like I was left out of shit.
Mm.
So like my only way of like being better than somebody or being competitive with people was like to make something that was so creative that somebody felt like, yo, I can't make that.
Mm.
You know, and like that's kind of where I felt like, all right, well, this is my comfort zone. You know, I can be creative. Like, I was great in fucking language arts and shit. Sucked in all my other classes.
Right.
Fucking worst kid. But language arts, when it came to writing essays and writing stories, and I was nice. Like, I was writing shit that niggas was like, yo, how you even thought of that? Like, you know what I'm saying?
I remember my SAT scores. I had, like, a high-ass, like, verbal or English component, and then my math shit was, like, terrible.
Word.
It's just your brain, like, you know.
I couldn't do math. I wasn't,
exactly. We're,
I wasn't that
we're similar.
Great. I was not that great at math.
I could write
at
a story
all.
Or something, but I could, like, in terms of doing math, that shit just never really connected with me.
Definitely 100% feel you.
Rappers always say that, too, though. They always say, like, I didn't do good in school, but I was good at math, as in saying, like,
nah,
but I was good at selling
niggas
drugs.
Niggas is lying.
No.
Niggas
you
is
weren't.
Lying.
You're lying.
All the niggas that I know that ended up being, like, some like, rap niggas, or not saying they were super famous rap niggas, but all the niggas that I knew that were like trappers and niggas that did anything that had some kind of money coming out of school. Mm. All them niggas was horrible at math. And they was great at math afterwards for the basic math that they needed to count money.
Mm.
That's it. Niggas know how to count money and swear they know math.
Well, motherfuckers will get like 50
you know
grand and they'll get a money counter.
Real talk, dog. Like, yo, it'd be crazy. Like, you know what I'm saying?
They need the money counter real early. Real early in their
crazy,
trapping
dog.
Career.
Like, you know. I don't know, bro. Like, I was never good at math. I was never good at school, period. I hated my fucking teachers. My teachers didn't like me. A lot of, like, I remember this one teacher, like, I'll never forget this bitch. Yo, I'm in the hallway. I wasn't even in her class, bro. I was in the hallway, but she was a teacher who, like, knew me. Like, she knew that I was always misbehaving and blah, blah, blah. And I was in her class. I mean, I was walking through the hallway, and she brought me in her class. And she was like, hold on, stand in front of here. She stood me in front of the whole class, right? She knew I was skipping.
Mm-hmm.
She stood me in front of the whole class. And then she's like, yo, Crystal, come up here. And Crystal was like this girl, like, you know, straight A's, like,
right.
You know, did her work.
So she was doing an example of the good kid and the bad kid?
She brought this girl to the top of to the front of the class, bro. And she said... she said, everybody take a look at Crystal and take a look at Daystar. Daystar is my actual name. And she said, take a look at Crystal and take a look at Daystar. And she said, in the near future, Crystal will be the one signing Daystar's checks, right?
That's fucked up.
So, and I remember, like, I took it such a way, and I remember walking out of class. I walked out of school, actually, and I stayed in school for maybe one more week after that, and I was like, yo, fuck this shit, I'm out.
Right.
And
how the fuck is that okay for them to just shit on a little kid's dream,
yo, she
man?
She killed me. That's terrible. Yo, she killed me. But you know what's crazy? I swear on everything. I ended up, like, years later, probably, like, when this shit started popping, I wasn't big Tory Lanez yet, but I was selling out my own, like, 300, 400 people venues and
you
shit like that.
Crystal?
Like, no, I didn't smash
you
Crystal.
You smashed the teacher?
I employed Crystal.
Whoa.
Yeah. She worked at our store. She worked at our store for 2 months, and I signed her checks for 2 months. You know what I'm saying? The store got closed down. It wasn't the biggest fucking craziest shit. Like, yeah, we still employ Crystal. Ah. And Crystal, if you're watching this, this is not even nothing to you. You just know what happened.
No shade.
Right? Yeah. No shade. But boom, it's funny because when she came to work, she was actually in college, and she was, you know, she was like, she, I guess for the first 2 years that she got out of school, she never went to college. Boom, ended up going to college. This is the straight A, you know what I'm saying? So for 2 years, she didn't really do nothing like major. So when she finally started going to school and shit and realized, like, you know, money is needed and things like that, I met up with her. I was like, yo, I'll give
Come
you
back
a job.
To Daystar.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, for sure. Like, you feel me? And she was like, yo, you know, it's funny because we made jokes about it. Like, yo, you know, it's funny, da da da. I always thought that shit was fucked up. And that's why I'm not going to hold that against you, Crystal. But, you know, it was just one of those things where I feel like, yo, that was a moment that showed me in life, things go back around if you just go hard at whatever you believe in. And as cliche as that is to say, it's just the fucking truth, my nigga. You know, like, crazy situations, things you never thought would happen. You know, things change, bro.
When I was in third grade, I was looking at, like, all my old shit in my mom's house, and I found this fucking piece of paper, this, like, little art project type thing that you're supposed to do. You're supposed to write, like, what you want to be when you grow up, and I want to be a rapper. And the teacher wrote on it, like, Adam, you need to be more realistic. Like, you know, like, that's not a serious profession, blah, blah, blah. Like, totally shitting on me. Look at me now, bitch. I still ain't rap, but, you know, I know a lot of rappers, so hey, take it. No, but I think that's the worst thing you could do, that to just shit on a kid's dream. I could never imagine, like, even if you really believe that the kid has no talent or some shit, you're a teacher.
Bro, I've never even been one to do that. Like, even when I know, like I've had people play me some shit, it's horrible, and then give me the mixtape. And I've seen artists do crazy shit, like throw your mixtape, or you see, like, you give a nigga a mixtape, you walk down the corner, your shit's on the floor, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, but I've never ever treated nobody like that. Like, I've never, even if I felt like, yo, this is shit, my nigga, like, I don't even want to hear this shit. Like, I tell a nigga, yo, keep pushing, bro. Keep pushing. Like, yeah, I ain't got a lot of you tell you, yo, yeah, this shit fire. Like, I'm not gonna do all that, but I'm gonna tell you, yo, my nigga, keep pushing, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Just keep working hard, bro. Simple and plain. Like, I feel like when you break somebody's dream, that might be the deciding factor of, like, what could change the world or not. You might say the wrong thing to the right mind, and that might be, you know, the end result to something that could have been great.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just a dark thing to, like, want to have a negative impact on somebody's life like that. If anything, I have a lot of guilt about the fact that so many kids pitch their fucking dreams to me in my DMs, whatever, always trying to have that conversation with me, and I realistically can't have that conversation with everybody. And that
that's
makes
one thing,
me feel kind of dirty about that,
I'm
you know?
I'm not going to lie. And it was fucked up because I always told myself, like, yo, the way these niggas did me, my nigga, when I get famous, my nigga, I promise, my nigga, I'm never gonna do niggas like this, bro. But then you realize, bro, it's not even that niggas mean to do you. Like, there's just so much that I can't
process
as a human,
all that.
Brother, I cannot process all of this. I can see what sticks out. You get what I'm saying? So I see what sticks out, and I click it from time to time and listen to what all I can do. But it's like, sometimes you just don't. Realistically don't have the time to do certain things.
What are you on musically at this point in your life outside of your own shit? I'm sure you listen to your own shit a lot. Like, what is the kind of shit that you personally gravitate towards musically?
What have I been listening to lately? Like, to be like 100% honest with you, and I don't mean to sound, you know, like boasty or some weird shit, but like, I've been recording this Love Me Now shit, and like, because it has so many other artists on it, I've been kind of happy with that. Like, it's like, and I don't mean to like try to shamelessly plug in my shit, but it's just like, that's literally all I really been listening to. And I'm trying to think now, like, what have I, like, you know, like, what have I been listening to? Like, of course, the Wayne shit. The Wayne shit dropped.
Was that exhilarating for you?
That was crazy.
Man. Great to see him back.
That was crazy. It's like, oh, this nigga came back in a major way, and it almost made me feel like, I know it was like me as a fan. I felt like, oh, okay, Wayne. So you was just hiding the good records because you was waiting to get off Cash Money. like okay,
save
cool,
up for
my
5 years.
Like, say less. I knew. I never doubted you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was never one of the niggas who doubted. So, like, for him to come back crazy after I told niggas for years, like, you got to understand how I felt, like, as a fan, bro. Like, yo, I told niggas Wayne was going to come crazy again, nigga.
And it was always supposed to be like, oh, look at all these young new rappers. They're the reason why Lil Wayne is not going to be popping anymore. It's because of Young Thug. It's because of Uzi, blah, blah, blah. And then in reality, it comes out that, like, Wayne could take a 5-year break
and
come back and go crazy.
Because we all know Jumper Man, you know what I'm saying? Like, we actually got the first opportunity to work together, and something great came out of it.
You and Wayne?
Yeah.
Really?
He remixed one of the songs on the project.
The new project?
Yes, sir.
Holy shit. So do you know how that happened, or you sent it to him?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. We connected the dots. Shout out GP in the building. Shout out Stevie J and Mac. And everybody who helped out.
That's crazy. When are you going to hear that? We're going to hear that on the project?
You're going to hear it very soon. I'm going to add it to the project because I couldn't clear it in time. It recently just happened.
Really?
But yeah.
That's exciting.
We're going to release it soon.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
GP in the corner like, yo, man, why he?
That was supposed to be secret info?
Fuck that, bro. It's coming out in a couple days, man. It's lit. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's lit.
No, you got to drop the little jewels in the interview, because then the other media outlets will be like, that's a reason to talk about this interview, is to be like, look at this one little jewel. If you drop one jewel in each interview, that's like my, this is just my strategy for artists, is like, then each interview could like go viral from, you know.
I mean, but me, I'm more so just excited at the fact that, you know, that's one of my favorite artists growing up, and
yeah,
you know, I got to work with him.
It's like, crazy, you know, like, seeing him come up again with this album and shit is crazy as fuck, because it's like, oh, like, it's a nice reminder that, like, the real talent and shit will shine through at the end of the day. And yeah. I feel like, as much as rap, sometimes, you know, it goes through cycles where people love to, like, say that it's all ringtone rap, or lately it's just SoundCloud rap, blah, 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 it's just bullshit. And it's like, you know, there is some truth to that, I think, sometimes, but it's nice when you see, like, somebody who's able to, like, but I don't even have that doubt, because when you look at rap now, it's like a lot of the dudes who sell the most are really the dudes who have, like, the illest skill set, so they actually are really, really
and
good.
And that's the thing, like, I think that at times people forget, and that's why I never get mad at, like, if I'm not dropping music and it's a time where I'm off season, I'm not upset about who's, you know, like, who's dropping shit, or who's, like, for me personally, it's like a situation where when I make music and I'm and it comes down to a standpoint, like, all I care about is just the people listening to it. Like, I don't care about all of the extras that go into it, you feel me? And, like, sometimes, and not to just change the subject, but, like, me personally, I feel like even with certain artists who they say are like SoundCloud rappers, or you, what is a SoundCloud rapper? Like, it, because I remember a lot of niggas popping off SoundCloud that weren't, you know,
that, you know, no similarities.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, I feel like we forget when this popping nigga is popping, or this trendy nigga is popping, there's still Kendricks, there's still Coles, still Kanye's and Drake's and people that are racking in numbers that are just like world record numbers, and it's because the music is still, that's what people, you grow out of trendy shit. You grow out of trendy shit, and unless that trendy person changes his music into something that is not relatable to people his own age group, eventually it gets to a point where it's like we grow out the trend, grow out whatever it was that was exciting us, because we get older, and you know, it's natural as humans, when you see the same thing, it slowly stops exciting you. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like real music always prevails. And that's why I never really get upset. All of these dudes who pop, they came from a standpoint where they had to pass this same level that I'm at, or this same level where you're at.
Right.
Everybody who's popping had to pass that level. at some point. They had to stand exactly where you were standing. And when they were standing there, they're regular people too. They still had the same doubts, the same insecurities that you may have. You feel me? So it's like at the end of the day, look at it that way and just keep excelling, bro. That's it.
Definitely. Yo, I was just looking at the list of questions I got from readers, and this one stood out to me. Favorite Halloween memories? Any good costumes that we need to know about, or anything in particular you might have done as a kid or anything?
I definitely was Joel Santana.
Whoa.
And
you kind of still are with that jacket. Right. I could see him in that.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I always keep a fly jacket on. No, I feel like the only, and no pun intended, but I feel like the only artist that could fuck with me when it comes to jackets and like crazy jackets is Cameron. There's no other artist I feel like is out here that's just coming with this crazy. Every time you see me, I got some crazy statement jacket on. Like,
he changed rap fashion to a crazy different level. He did so much shit. He's
definitely different. You feel me?
Joel Santana's funny though, because you being him back in the day, you just got to get like a 4X shirt.
Bro, I ironed my bandana so long. Bro, I could not get the shit to be crisp on my. I had to staple that shit. At one point, I tried to get that shit so crisp. I ironed it and I stapled it, nigga. And it was still not as crisp. And it had me thinking to myself, like, fuck was this nigga doing his bandana, my nigga? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the fuck was this nigga doing, bro? Like, real shit.
If you're going to be Joel's, you got to get, like, a fitted hat that's, like, four fucking sizes too big. And then you got to put it over your ears.
Yo. And, yo, you got to have, like, some big ears. Look. They go to the picture right there. You can't show them the picture.
Let me see. I'll
can't
put
show
camera.
Them the picture.
Oh my God, this is too real. Look at that. Dipset.
Yo, I even got the.
Oh my God. Fire. That was such a dope era. And you know, I could confirm, I was living in New York at that time, that you really would be just like walking around and just see dudes with their hats so big just over their ears. And I always had a big ass head. I couldn't even, like, I could barely wear the hats that were like the biggest hats that they had in the store because my head was so big. So I had to go and like order like an 8¼ on fucking eBay or some shit.
That's crazy. You know what's crazy too? It's like in that era, niggas' clothes was so baggy that you thought so many niggas was big until small shit came in and you started realizing, like, yo, it's niggas on the block was getting punked by some niggas in some baggy shit, my nigga, because they thought the nigga was probably big. Niggas start wearing small clothes. Niggas was like, oh, it's you? Oh, it's you? It was just that taunty making you look crazy, my nigga. Word, okay. You ever think shit gonna get back to that place?
Just giant clothes.
Like, I see so many niggas trying to bring it in, but it's like, I can't imagine myself wearing fucking baggy ass jeans anymore.
And you know what's crazy is, it seems like the whole art of carrying a gun in public must have changed a lot with the pant size changing. I say that as a person who's never really carried a gun around my pants, but it must have been a lot easier in those big ass pants than in the tight jeans.
I think it was probably easy to camouflage, but I feel like, to be honest with you, if you're somebody who knows how to tuck his gun, or if you're somebody who tucks his gun, you know how to tuck your gun.
But you remember when Wayne came out with the jeggings, the super, super tight pants and shit? Like, because it went real tight for a while.
Well, see, I never went that far. Like, I never went, you're a jerk.
The jerker era.
I never went.
That was complicated for a lot of people in L.A.
I never went that far with it. Like, you feel me? Like, I never wore, like, you know, the highlighter pants and the... I never did that.
I was lucky. I was always bigger, so I couldn't rock the girls' jeans and shit. I knew people were rocking girls' jeans back in the day, bro.
I mean, hey, nowadays it's just niggas just rocking Marys and all kinds of different jeans and, you know.
Okay, but that is really the question, is like, how committed are you to the drip in the sense that, like, you know, you look at someone like Gunna. A big part of his fucking brand is that he's just out here looking like a fucking runway model every day, rocking a crazy ass outfit every day.
I mean, yo, dressing is an expression at the end of the day. Like, there's a lot of niggas that dress, but it's not a lot of niggas that's saucy.
Mm.
Like, when I dress, a nigga could wear the same shit as me. But you're not gonna rock it how I'm gonna rock it.
Mm.
Sorry. We gonna walk down the same street, they gonna be like, yo, he rocking the shit out of that shit. Niggas might look at your fit and be like, yo, what you got on? They might forget that we got the same fit on.
Mm.
That's how I feel. It's all about confidence. It's all about expression. It's all about how you feel when you wear your clothes and how you know what I'm saying? Like, that all comes with your own expression of life, you feel me? So, I mean, Gunna's a stylish nigga, too. You know what
He's
I'm saying?
He's doing it.
Definitely stylish, man. So, I got to give it up to all the young niggas that's giving it up. Shout out, Gunna. Gunna's also on a project too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's on a record called Miami. Gunna, Lil Baby, Trippie Redd is on there.
On the same song?
No.
Oh, okay.
Nah, just different features.
Right.
Yeah, just a lot of people on that record, you know, and it's more so like a collaborative project. I just wanted to, I never do music with features, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't really, that's not, it wasn't really my biggest thing, you feel me? Now, it's recently I've started doing them, and so this project, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give my fans, you know, what they want, because you never know the next time I could be here. You know why I even made this project? Like, just a small backstory why this shit was made. We was in a jet on the way to Summer Jam, right?
The jet. Subtle and flex.
No, we had to. We had to take it.
Right.
And the fucking thing is, it's like, that same day, it's crazy. We got to the jet place, and...
Yo, can you guys be quiet over there?
We got to the jet place, and I seen him doing something with the nose of the jet. And I'm like, yo, we got to make it to Summer Jam. My set is at such and such a time. And they're like, yo, there's wear and tear or some shit on the jet. And when I was like, yo, I remember getting, I was upset. I was like, yo, my nigga, these niggas don't got this shit on time. I'm about to miss my set. And they were like, yo, don't worry. It's about to be set in 20 minutes. Just because he gets on the phone, he talks to this guy, and then he all of a sudden they're just like, yo, don't worry, it's lit. It's about to be ready in 20 minutes. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So I get on this jet now, right? And we get in the sky, sleeping. My dog is on the plane, like it's a couple of us. And I'm sleeping, and all of a sudden, bro, wake up, and I hear this beep, this beep. And I'm like, yo, what the fuck is going on? So I wake up now, because this shit just like keeps going. Like, you know, sometimes you sleep through some shit, but this shit just keeps like waking me up. So I wake up now. And all of a sudden, I just see the mask come down, right?
On the jet.
In the jet.
Holy shit.
So the mask come down now, right? And I'm looking around, and it's me, and I'm looking at this nigga. I got this nigga named GP, and I'm looking at this nigga, and I'm like, yo, this, what's up with this? Like, you know what I'm saying? Because he's a nigga he took more jets than me.
Right.
So I'm like, yo, Yo, what's up with this, bro? Like, you feel me? He's like, yo, nah, you know what I'm saying? It's just a gas mask. You know, we be smoking on this shit, so you know sometimes it's just come down. I'm like, nah, my nigga. I look to the front, and I see the captain, and the captain, he's putting on his mask, right? But he's not coming to the back and saying anything. And all of a sudden, I start feeling this shit just start shaking, right?
Yeah.
My nigga, this shit starts shaking crazy. All of a sudden, my nigga, this shit, and remember, they have a little digital thing on the plane that says the altitude, that says the fucking time that you're gonna be at the, you know what I'm saying, the speed that you're going and all that shit, and how high you are at what time, blah blah blah. So and the duration of the flight.
Uh-huh.
So boom. We are at 39,000 feet? 39,000 feet we were, and what happened was our autopilot disconnected.
Mm.
The autopilot is what, for those people who don't know, the autopilot is what makes the plane just smooth like that. Like when you're just rolling and you feel like you're sitting in the same spot, that's the autopilot just cruising you know what I'm saying? The only time they really fly in the plane is the first like 8 minutes. So boom, the autopilot goes out. We land in turbulence. We start going like this. But it's getting crazy. Like each one of these shits is crazy. Like to the point where it's like, my nigga, like niggas on the plane, like we think, yo, this is, yo, we're dead. Like, we're about to die, my nigga. Like, this shit goes down. We land into a Category 3 storm. So we're flying. We like, the turbulence or whatever it is brings us down to a Category 3 storm. Nigga, the plane starts going crazy. Boom. All of a sudden, we're going down. Ah, niggas are screaming. Ah. All of a sudden, boom, 11,000 feet. For some reason, it catches. And we're going. I looked at the time, bro. We fell, what was it, GP? We fell 26,000 feet. We fell 26,000 feet in a minute and like 37 seconds or something like that.
Holy shit.
It's like, imagine looking at the time, it says 5:30,
uh-huh,
and you're 39,000 feet. And then like out of all the madness, then you look up and you're like, and when it finally gets stable, and then you look and it says 31 or 32 or like, No, I'm talking about like the time. Like imagine seeing like imagine it's 5:30 and then you see 5:31 after you just fell 24,000 feet. You're like, yo, I just did that in a minute time. At that point, they told us that, yo, if it didn't randomly just connect again, because it's like a Wi-Fi kind of thing. Uh-huh. If it didn't randomly just connect, we had about, what was it, 5 or 7 seconds before we hit the ground and we died. Or 30 seconds, my bad.
Holy shit.
We had 30 seconds probably before we hit the ground and we died.
So what was going through your head during this? What kind of effect did it have on you?
I was thinking about my son, and then when I got off the plane, I started thinking to myself, like, then there's music that I haven't, there's things I haven't done, bro. I haven't worked with all the people wanted me to work with. Mm. I haven't done all the things that people wanted me to do. I haven't collaborated with people that people wanted, you know what I'm saying? Like, what mark did I make in music? And then it caused me to just like make this. And I was like, yo, I'm gonna let everybody be a part of this.
That's some scary shit.
You that shit died. Was a life-changing experience for me.
In the worst way imaginable,
and
too.
It's one of those things where it's like, I'm that one guy who's like, yo, I pray that this one thing never happens to me. And that right. was the one thing that happened to me.
Holy shit. That actually makes me really like excited to hear it and shit.
Bro, that shit fucking fucked me the fuck up, my nigga. I went on another plane.
Sorry, slight miscalibration there. shit, so I mean, fuck, that might be actually a good spot for us to sort of wrap this with. Just the fact that you fucking almost died to make this album.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? That was the inspiration behind it. So Love Me Now is dropping this Friday, October 26th, everywhere. So, yeah.
I'm ready, man. That's fucking... Just, I want to hear all these features and stuff. Like, I just want to see you in that element. We haven't necessarily seen you with, like, fucking a lot of these dudes, and it's just probably going to be crazy to actually see it happen.
Nah, man, it's love, man, and I'm just happy to be here. Like, you know what I'm saying? It could have went a lot of different ways.
Nah, definitely.
But it's this way right now, you know what I'm saying? So, I'm happy, bro.
You made it.
Let's get it.
Hey, man. I appreciate you coming in. You're definitely one of the best, like, conversationalists that I've had on the podcast in recent memory.
Love, bro. Appreciate that shit. It was an incredible interview, too. I like coming in. I hope that we have more.
No, I definitely agree. That's definitely, like, I look at a lot of the podcasts that I watch with, like, comedians or Joe Rogan or whatever, and it's just they sit down and just have, like, long-ass rambling conversations that go in a million different directions.
People don't really be knowing what to talk about or don't really have real shit to talk about. You know what I'm saying? So... I don't know. I like to come and just express myself, and hopefully people take, you know, whatever it is from me that they need to take.
Mm.
You know?
Facts.
So that's all it is.
Shit. Well, Tory Lanez, new project on the way. Appreciate you, man. Thank you for coming in.
You already know.
We're
going
to do it again.
Love.
Love, bro. No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube. Pow. I'm rolling like an alpine, but got no tow weight.